Okay. And we have just two cards for public forum, but...
And I was given two more.
Okay. But let me point out that I talked to some folks at the break who either didn't, they may have indicated public comment, but then said ag waiver process, or indicated public forum, but then ag waiver process. And I told them it seemed to me it would make sense to talk about those when we talk about all the ag issues. They were kind of concerned about having to go into the afternoon, and I said, I think we'll get there by before noon, so
okay.
It's that caveat.
Okay, so this is not public forum.
Right.
Subject item 18. All right. Someone wants to talk about, you know, at public forum, we don't entertain discussion about any other items on the agenda. So item 18, this is Mr. Johnson. Well, we've already discussed item 18. So if you want to talk to us at public forum about anything else, you can do that. But 18 we've already dealt with.
That's fine. It'll be future TMD.
Okay. That's fine.
For sure.
Okay. So we'll do public forum. Jeff Edwards, Mrs. Taylor, Mr. Caldwell, Mr. Vengard, Mr. Shimmick, and Mr. Johnson, in that order. Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards. I'm a 30-year resident of Los Osos. And first of all, I'd like to commend your staff, especially David Licaro, for preparing a July 2010 memo regarding the Los Osos groundwater basin. And it now appears that seawater intrusion is officially on the radar screen of your board, which is a good thing. Unfortunately, implementation of the now approved Los Osos wastewater project, consistent with the coastal development permit, will not address the critical water supply situation, as that's been deferred to the so-called ISJ working group, which is referenced in the Licaro memo. The rate of seawater intrusion in zones D and E of our lower groundwater basin in Los Osos is increasing. The lower groundwater basin is at a tipping point. If lost to seawater intrusion, our primary source of domestic supplies will be gone permanently. The substance of the Licaro memo reflects many representations made by the San Luis Obispo County Public Works Department. And I've written a letter responding to some of those points, and I'll pass it out later. I've emailed it to your staff. The county information provided to your staff reflects many inaccuracies and misleading information. As an example, the county has asserted that there's a great potential for blending, for establishing blending schemes with the focus on utilizing upper basin or zone C water, including a long-term, if not permanent, shift from using lower basin water to relying on this upper basin water, zone C again. The ISJ, as referenced earlier, is a temporary settlement agreement. Any of the participants can opt out with a 30-day notice, and I think that's important to take into consideration. The main actors under the ISJ are the two main water purveyors in the community. That's the Los Osos CSD and Golden State Water Company. The primary focus of the ISJ working group is to prepare a basin management plan, a plan that will map out future action items that will address our water limitations and our basin challenges. However, this is only a plan. The plan will not execute any of the action items contained in the basin management plan, and there's been a draft released, and that's referenced in my letter. The water purveyors and their customers are to be left to fend for themselves with regard to implementing any water resource projects. Water purveyors, they put wells in the ground, and they pump and deliver that water. They don't engage in more elaborate schemes. And if I may conclude, Mr. Chairman, by saying I think the most single important thing that's been left out of the basin management plan is the investigation of a surface water discharge into the upper reaches of Los Osos Creek on a scheduled basis during the summertime when the creek is dry. Hydrogeology and geologic information has demonstrated that the creek bottom, that I should say more aptly, the lower basin daylights or surfaces at the creek bottom in Los Osos. Thank you very much. Los Osos needs your help to encourage the county to pursue a surface water discharge. Thank you.
Okay. Mrs. Taylor?
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos. I'm a resident of the Prohibition Zone. Since 1972, we have been trying to get this board as well as the region, as the county, to recognize a problem of seawater intrusion to our water basin. This board has information from an engineer that was hired by your board in 1970. The report went to the county and it went to you. Subsequently, throughout the years, there have been additional information and reports of seawater intrusion. We have one basin that supplies the whole community. Everyone, not just the Prohibition Zone, is supplied with water from this basin. Unfortunately, the county has not taken the responsibility to take action, which they could under the 2701 SB that was promoted by Mr. Blakesley. It is a bill that allows the county to implement a water basin plan. It's written right in there. There is nothing that precludes the county from putting into effect a restriction as to the usage of water. Now, that having been said, I would ask you to use your political clout, which has been used for other things, not only you, but your staff, to ask the county to enforce a basin-wide prohibition ordinance. They can do it. They should do it. Until they do it, there are people right to this moment that do not know that there is even any problem with quantity or quality of water in our basin. And until it is made public, it is promoted, if you wish, there are going to be people who are at this time writing the PUC saying, the county has never taken any action. If there were a problem with water or saltwater intrusion or quantity, the county surely would have taken action. And there is a letter that is being signed by a number of the public and sent to the PUC with this premise that there are no problems. I would hope that you would take action and ask your staff to use their clout to get the county to take action, because we are in a world of hurt. Not tomorrow, not in the next 5 years, but right now.
Okay, thank you for your comments. I don't think any of the speakers are going to address this topic, but I thought we could respond to the two speakers, because this came up at our last board meeting. And I don't think we really addressed anything at that point, but we were going to kind of maybe look at what we could do. And I think maybe that the public has a misunderstanding that we don't regulate water supply. I mean, we don't have a direct handle for regulating water use and water supply. The ISJ process is the vehicle for doing that. It's not a perfect vehicle. But, you know, the regulation of groundwater and saltwater intrusion fits into that category, is less well-defined in terms of who regulates it. It's not this agency, though. Now, having said that, the ISJ has been set up to work these technical issues out. And my question to you folks is, have you addressed the ISJ? And have you addressed the county? Because The county is the entity you have elected your supervisors. They report or are accountable directly to you. And they are the primary entity that you should be addressing this on. We can certainly write to the county, write to the ISJ, and encourage them to look at these issues. But we don't have any true leverage with them. Mr. Edwards, please come up, and I'll give you a minute to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've made this pitch to the Board of Supervisors repeatedly. I can't tell you how many times. And the Coastal Commission. The problem with addressing the ISJ is they operate under the cloak of litigation. There is no public participation. So there's no opportunity. We come to your board knowing that it's a murky area, indeed. But if seawater intrusion isn't a quality problem, I'm not sure what is. The bottom line is...
But hold on, Mr. Edwards. It is a water quality problem. I think we would all agree with you. But it involves water supply, and we typically deal with permitting waste. And that's how we got our regulatory hands around a problem. This is pretty much undefined for us, except for getting up the ISJ process and the water basin management plan.
Can I add something to that?
Yeah.
I mean, I think basically, and this, yes, definitely, you know, saltwater intrusion is a water quality problem, but the things we have jurisdiction are restricted by law to discharges to water. And historically, and maybe you can correct me, there are other, saltwater intrusion areas in our region, and the state board, which has jurisdiction over water supply, has always been the one that deals with those, that enforces against those, that works with the communities, not the regional boards.
Yes, and indeed, I've communicated with state board members,
well, then you're doing the right thing.
There's been a letter from Maldonado's office where he transmits a letter from DWR that says, well, really, it's the local county flood control district that's responsible for seawater intrusion. So is it the local, state, or, who's really involved here? The bottom line is, if nothing is done, if everybody just throws up their hands and says it's not our responsibility, we will lose the lower basin. There's no question in my mind.
Well,
and excuse me, I'd like to make one quick point. It would be truly unfortunate if after decades of work on establishing a wastewater system to deal with nitrates in our groundwater, that we've lost the very basin that we've sought to protect. That would be truly unfortunate.
Well,
sorry.
But Mr. Edwards, it wouldn't be accurate to say that people are throwing up their hands and saying nothing is being done, because there is something being done, and that's the ISJ process. It may not be doing what you would like it to do. It may not be considering everything and giving everything the weight that you would like it to give weight. That's a problem we can't do much about.
I would ask your staff to review the draft basin management plan, which is available, and review it critically, because conservation, while it's important, it is not the single answer. And yet that's being offered as the panacea. This notion of using upper aquifer water. These are septic returns that we're going to be asked to drink. I'm not personally interested in doing that. And I really question whether the community is, or the water customers. So clearly it's complex. Areas of jurisdiction are fuzzy. But I believe your staff has a great deal of capability and potential. And I think if they apply the appropriate pressure to the county, which is the tail wagging the ISJ dog, then maybe some things might progress. We're not in a good spot right now, and we need to get there.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Briggs, what has staff done, I think, since we last discussed this issue internally? I think we had staff look at that report.
We look at the initial memo that came out, and I don't know if you're talking about the draft actual basin management plan. I haven't
Yes.
looked at that myself.
Correct.
But anyway, and I don't want to debate anymore. I don't think we should be doing that. But from my standpoint, kind of talking about this, the regulatory framework, we do have actually a bit of an additional regulatory foothold by way of the recycled water policy, which calls for salt and nutrient management plans. And we have talked to the county and have their agreement that the basin management plan, through their involvement with ISJ process, will be a cornerstone or part of the salt and nutrient management plan for the Los Osos Basin. Salt and nutrient management plan, that is not just for salts from leaching salts that build up or can build up in a groundwater basin. It also has to do with seawater intrusion, bringing salts in. So that is something new from just last year as far as the state board's policy. That has a five-year window, which is a long time when you have a immediate threat. So in that regard, the board was previously told by some members of the public that they were not getting information on what the ISJ was doing as far as any interim steps, and that they seem to be just waiting for this basin management plan, which I thought was going to be out in December, and the draft plan. So what we did was we got information from the ISJ, and we disseminated that, and that's the memo that has been referenced here from Dave Licaro, to tell folks who have complained to the board about this lack of information, give them the information about those interim steps that the agencies and entities are taking in the meantime as they go work towards coming up with a comprehensive basin management plan. So that was what we did in response to that, to try to provide the information on those interim steps to indicate that the ISJ isn't just sitting back and doing nothing in the meantime, but planning. They're actually trying to take the interim steps that they can to make progress on the seawater intrusion problem in the meantime.
If I could just close by saying, and not to debate any questions here, but really, the disposal plan, and I think that's largely what's being referred to here, the summertime component of that disposal plan is what's at issue. They know what to do with the water during the winter, wet weather. Take it to Broderson. The Broderson site will accept almost 500 acre feet a year. But it's the summertime that we're struggling with, and the county is struggling with. And the mere fact that we have a CDP for the project doesn't mean that we're home free. We've still got a long ways to go, and I'm hopeful that your staff and your board will be helpful. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm going to leave copies of my letter.
I think we have those. Is it dated August 31st?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, we were all given copies.
Okay,
thank you very much. Okay. Now, Mr. Caldwell, then Mr. Vengard, Mr. Shimmick, Mr. Johnson, and then Mr. Schmidt.
Chairman Young, members of the board, I'm Andy Caldwell. I serve as the executive director of the Coalition of Labor, Agriculture, and Business of both Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo counties. I've lived on the Central Coast for over 40 years. And I do recognize that, especially in the 60s, we had some severely polluted air and water throughout the United States. And I understand that we still have polluted waters in some locales. And so, you know, I basically respect the mission of the Regional Water Quality Control Board and the EPA and everybody else that regulates these things for beneficial uses. However, we believe a mistake was made in designating the Santa Maria River as having a beneficial use of water contact recreation. I drive over that riverbed two times a day. And the only time I ever see water in that river is after a storm event, or in every few years there might be a release of water from Twitchell to recharge the groundwater basin. I also drive across the Bonita School Road probably at least a couple of times a month. The only time I see water there is if there was a storm event, and the bottom line is maybe it's 8 to 10 inches deep and a foot or two wide. The riverbed is privately owned. Some people actually farm in parts of the riverbed. Some people ride off-road vehicles in that riverbed. That riverbed is basically covered in brush. Now, we know we have storm events from time to time where the river could run all the way to the ocean, but in that particular instances, that water is not safe to swim in or recreate in, either because of the velocity or the water quality, and your staff, I don't think, has any dreams of being able to clean up storm water to drinking water standards or anything else like that. But the bottom line, we were at a workshop a couple weeks ago with your staff in Santa Maria, and we said, look, you know, most of us have lived here all our lives. Nobody's ever swam in this river. Nobody's going to swim in this river. You shouldn't be making everybody try to clean it up so that people could swim in something they're never going to swim in. And your staff answered, it's out of our hands. You know, it's something designated by Congress and the EPA. But that's where you come in. You're appointees to represent the people. You're appointees to represent municipalities. You're appointees to represent interests in the community. And if something's not right, if something is factually incorrect, that somebody has designated a river for swimming, which is not going to happen and it hasn't happened for generations, why spend time, energy, and money instead of correcting the record? Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
I was looking for verification. I think waiting is included as rec one. I'm getting nodding of heads. So even though it's only a foot and a half deep or something like that, it doesn't preclude recreation in the riverbed and wading. We know that lots of other areas there is recreation in riverbeds that are that may be predominantly dry, but there are areas where just groundwater surfaces. You may not even have flowing water, but you have groundwater that surfaces for pools. San Ynez River, for example, and it's available for wading and if not swimming, and that falls under the definition of Rec 1. And there is a process available for de-designating if that's appropriate. It's not an easy thing, but it is possible if that's appropriate.
Mr. Caldwell, have you contacted staff about this issue?
At the workshop.
That was Dominic Rock. Who was there? No?
Chris.
That was Chris. Okay. Well, that's who you should deal with in terms of pursuing your interest in getting it de-designated. And that's the starting point. All right. Thank you. Mr. Vanguard?
Good morning. I have some copies here. You want me to just give them to you now or give them to me after I talk?
Now is fine.
I just wanted to preface my comments here about, I know you guys go through a lot of work and reviewing data, and I've spent a lot of time in the industry looking at what goes on behind the scenes, but that's the first time I've talked to your board. But I have some grave concerns that I wanted to bring forward here that I think that you guys need to hear, and so that's what I want to talk about this morning. My name is Barton Bengard. I'm a fifth-generation farmer and rancher in the Lower Salinas watershed. I produce crops and livestock and land that's been our family since the turn of the last century. I'm here to address the board about some serious concerns I have concerning the process that has turned my profession and livelihood into a target for the bureaucrats to feed upon. Instead of conversations with staff regarding our concerns, we had educated in a one-way information flow. This is no way to achieve compliance or cooperation from the agricultural community. The board has an obligation to review and determine if recommendations from staff are feasible and realistic. It also has discretionary powers to set reasonable regulations. In my opinion, this has not been done. For example, the scientific peer review of one of the studies used as a basis for impairment states that there is very little evidence that fecal coliforms, FIB, are a good indicator for evaluating public health risks. from non-point source pollution. And that, I quote, "One of the chief uncertainties is the release of naturalized FIB from non-fecal or not recently fecal sources. These sources represent natural, uncontrollable sources and cannot be subjected to implementation actions," end quote. Nevertheless, this is exactly the standard we're going to be held to for non-point source pollution. We're being told to meet objectives that are impossible to meet. While staff tells you that they have an implementation plan to solve perceived problems, we're all the ones that have to write the checks.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. Does this relate to the TMDL? Because if it does, you've already acted on this,
right.
And this is a late written comment.
Does not relate to the TMDL.
Okay.
It was an example that I'm using of what's the process that the board is directing staff, okay, and how staff is relating to us, the public.
Okay. But
that's
this,
where I'm coming
but this
from.
This example does relate to...
The example does.
At least the TMDL, and you are from Salinas, which is in the
does
area.
Does that disqualify for me addressing somebody if I'm from Salinas?
No, except if it's on an issue that we've already addressed. But go ahead. Let's go ahead.
Okay,
and
you can read
it.
We're just about through the example part.
Okay.
Okay. While staff tells you that they have implementation plans to solve perceived problems, we're the ones that have to write the checks. I can only ask that you put yourselves in the shoes of farmers and ranchers you're being directed to regulate. Just because staff checks the box and states there's no impact doesn't mean that there isn't. How can a prohibition from an activity have no impact on existing use? Yet this is what you're asked to believe. I believe everyone wants to be in compliance with reasonable regulations and works diligently to do so. However, when unrealistic expectations are imposed, you automatically put people in a position of noncompliance with no way out. In addition, these actions place the burden of the producer to prove he is not a problem. In effect, the farmer or rancher is guilty until proven innocent. I do not believe that this is a standard this country is founded on. These actions are producing a climate of frustration and anger amongst those who are being impacted because we seem to be talking to a wall. Is this how it's supposed to work? I've been born and raised in the area and can guarantee you that I intend to take care of my land, my home, better than anyone here. This is evident from the 140 years my family has been involved in agriculture. The problem, as I see it, is that everyone is now making decisions based on fact generated by people who have a vested interest in producing an outcome to keep them in a job. These jobs are paid for by our tax dollars and fees. Meanwhile, the rest of us are engaged in managing a business, employing people, and producing a product to feed the nation. We're inundated by a barrage of regulations that pull and tug on everything we do. Please use your position of oversight to challenge the conclusions and recommendations given to you and not only solicit opinions, but also listen to those who you're regulating. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Bengard, I would hope that you would feel that this board has done just that. And we've had two workshops dealing just with ag itself.
Right.
And all of those issues involved with ag, you're not really using any other examples except the fecal coliform issue. You are mentioning farming and ranching, so it's kind of a mixed bag of where you're coming from. We dealt with ranching and the non-point source issue, and that is a total work in progress. What's going to happen with that TMDL, with the ag permit, and we're going to get into that later.
Right. Do you want me?
The board hasn't done anything yet. The board is listening to everybody.
Do you want me to respond?
No.
Okay.
I don't. You'll be able to talk later when we get into this as part of the EO report. But it does frustrate me at times when I hear things like this, because at least I feel we've been really trying to open the process up. Now, I know about criticisms of staff and that they're kind of not being as responsive, not looking at information that's being provided. I'm aware of that. But the board's going to deal with all this when we have the order before us, we have the staff report, and all this is going to be opened up for everybody to comment on and critique.
Well, if I could say one thing, that I think that if you were in those meetings, when I've been to three of those workshops, and if you were in those meetings, while they were happening, you would not feel that staff is being very responsive as far as what people's concerns are, other than they're trying to tell us the way it is. That's my response.
I'm aware of that. I'm aware of that criticism. The whole board is aware of that.
That's a reality.
It is a reality, and the board will use its discretionary power and will decide what kind of regulations are going to be applied within the permit at that time. So,
and I hope you do.
We did it the first time around when we issued the first waiver. We're going to just go through the same process all over again, and we're right in the middle of it. So
I'm sorry for interrupting. In regards to the ag waiver process, I know where you are. I'm talking about my interactions with staff. Specifically, since it is a mixed bag, we do both sides of the equation. We ranch and we farm. We've been around the community a long time. I understand the TMDL is in process with staff, and you guys ruled on the grazing prohibitions. I'm just trying to explain to you that there needs to be some balance here, because you're backing people in a corner when you ask questions. Your CCMP data, that you know, the lovely website that we saw here, has significant flaws in at least one of the points that they put on their map. The facts are not right. And when you talk to staff and bring it up, they act as if you're talking to the moon. And, you know, there's no response there. They don't follow up. They don't say, hey, what is the problem with the site? Well, the problem with the site is there's three diversion structures directly upstream from where they're pulling the water. There is no water. And how can there be water that's violating a standard when there is no water out of the stream bed? So
The way to deal with that, and that's what the board is here for, is when if the public doesn't feel that staff is being responsive, you send me a letter to the board.
You just got your first one. I'll send you more afterwards.
Okay.
Appreciate
and
it.
Then
you.
We can follow up and find out what's going on.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Jeffries, did you have something to add?
Yes, I do, and I think I kind of alluded to it. I want to go back to 18 again, but I think when I gave a little dissertation about how the roadmap is going to handle through grazing lands to farm lands to small ranches to cities and counties and so forth, I think this is some of the frustration that you're seeing from the public, is because the information is not getting to the people that needs to really hear it. And I think there's a lack of communication, because sometimes people don't speak the same language. You talk to an engineer, they're talking engineering language. You're talking to a person that raises cattle, he's talking about how to raise cattle. So there's a communications problem. Not that they're not talking English, but they're not talking the same English. And I think that's where our staff has to be really sensitive, that when they're talking to individuals, that they that they put it more in layman's language than engineering language. So they're both on the same page. And I think, and I'm not speaking for Mr. Bengard, but I think just from what I've heard overall from a lot of people in the agriculture community as well as the cattle, is that there is some lack of communication as well as understanding. And I think it's understanding from both sides. So I think we as a board have to work very hard with our staff that they can put that information out there correctly. And I think that's some of the frustrations of Mr. Bedgard and others have presented to us, and I'm sensitive to that, because these people are the bread and butter of our country. So,
yeah, and that's why I offer the suggestion: if you can give us the specifics of where the miscommunication is, or the lack of response or follow-up, then we can do something with it. So, you know, Mr. Briggs has your letter, and he's going to have staff respond to it for us so we know what's going on with the fecal coliform indicator issue, so we'll understand what the issue is there. Our hands may be tied with that, because that's been set by other agencies. But in terms of, you know, the rest of your letter is pretty general and speaks to the communication challenge. So it helps us if we get to some of the specifics, you know. And then we can do something with it.
I'd be happy to do that.
Yeah.
And we have tried, I have tried personally to engage staff multiple times.
Yeah.
They're very friendly. They look at you and they put a grin on their face and they nod their head. And when you turn around and walk away, no follow-up calls. You know, amongst not just these issues, just amongst a bunch of issues. I'd be happy to send that to you. Do I address that to you directly?
Yeah, just, well, to the chair of the board.
Okay.
Okay. And then the board can see it, and then we can have staff respond to it.
Yeah, you just don't know who to talk to. And like I say, you try to run businesses, you don't try to go over everybody's head all the time to try to get things done. That's
and
the problem.
And if you tried to speak to Mr. Briggs, who is the head staff person, and who may be able to get to the
I'll prefer
bottom.
To write to you and have Mr. Briggs respond to it.
Okay.
That would work better. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Schimmick, and then last speaker is Mr. Johnson.
Board members, Steve Schimmick, Monterey Coast Keeper. Put all that behind you, and let's talk about something new and fun. This is I'm bringing you to an issue about 303D impairments and about some confusion and problems that we need some serious problem solving. I don't necessarily have a solution for you. But it's the issue of sedimentation and turbidity. I think we would all agree that sedimentation is a major factor, and that sedimentation, both sediments carry pesticides, sediment, if a stream is heavily sedimented, there can be some impairments as far as fishery habitat. I mean, it's sedimentation is one of the major things that I think about when I think about impairments. And currently, we're not measuring for sedimentation. We measure for turbidity and sometimes use that as a surrogate for sedimentation. But the problem with that is that now we're going back and we're delisting things because, like in the last round, there was the talk about delisting San Vicente Creek, and passed in the last round was also the Lower Salinas. The Lower Salinas is the best example, because I think we would all go down to the Lower Salinas and say it's impacted by sediment. There's a problem here with sediment, and yet we delisted it. And we delisted it because there wasn't a line of evidence for sedimentation. We are not measuring for sedimentation. So I guess my suggestion to you is, if we in fact do stand back and think about it, and if we all collectively decide that sedimentation is a major issue, we need to be measuring for sedimentation. Sedimentation is a challenge because it involves spending time at the creek, not just grabbing a water sample and going back to the lab. It involves spending time in the creek, and that's where the problem is. But I would suggest picking some watersheds and some lower watersheds where we know that there might be a problem, and just saying, okay, we're going to try out a pilot program of measuring sedimentation in places like the Lower Salinas. I think it's important. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Johnson.
Good morning. Aaron Johnson on behalf of Monterey County Cattlemen's Association. Given the past history, item 18 came up much faster than it had in the past. So I apologize for not making comments at that time, and I will relate this to future TMDLs. But the bottom line for us is you had a choice 6 months ago to adopt the TMDL on the Lower Salinas River, and you realized that there was a process that had taken place where a group of landowners and property owners did not have adequate time to have meaningful dialogue with your staff, and you corrected that action by giving us that opportunity. We have taken several opportunities with staff and with our members to explain what the TMDL means, what some of that scientific information means, but you're absolutely right on piggybacking on the comment 2 comments ago. That is, that there is a communication gap between the scientific community and the farming and ranching community. And the bottom line is, I wanted to thank you for the time that you took and allowed us in this process. I think it helps, and I encourage you on future TMDLs to look at whether or not the property owners, the local cattlemen's associations, have been engaged. And if they haven't been, I would encourage you to do everything you can to get them involved, to understand what it is that is coming down the pike. And then I would also encourage that we take a look at whether or not we should take a region-wide approach to this issue. And so there have been conflicting messages within different camps, but basically I think the issue of whether or not a region-wide approach should be discussed with staff and amongst the various associations. So I wanted to thank staff for taking their time going up to Salinas on several occasions, talking with us, and thank you for your action and your patience, and I encourage you to follow that paradigm in the future. So thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Chris, perhaps you could make sure Mr. Johnson's group and the other cattlemen groups get a list of all TMDLs that are in the pipeline that may affect, you know, ranching and their constituents, and just make sure that they know these are on the horizon so they can start to engage with staff on them.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mr. Shelfron.
Yeah, I want to go back a minute to Steve Shimmick's comment. Do we have any response to him on that? And we have a response to everyone else. I just wondered why all of a sudden I thank you for your comments and next. Well, I mean, what about that? What about sedimentation monitoring in the lower Salinas? Is that a problem? Are we not interested? Are we delisting things because now all of a sudden we don't think turbidity is a good indicator? I mean, maybe someone could say something.
Part of his suggestion was that it sounded like you're saying we're looking at more grab samples than continuous monitoring, and that we should maybe have a pilot project to see if more continuous monitoring would yield different results. Yeah, Karen, you have some thoughts on that?
Well, sedimentation is really challenging. We do, along with our grab sampling program, we do total suspended solids, which is sediment in the water column, which doesn't have an objective associated with it. So in order to use it for example, a listing process, we'd have to use a guideline value that as a level we have some certainty there's a problem, but it's really challenging because it's highly event-dependent, and we're doing monthly sampling rather than event sampling. We do some other measures through CCAMP that measures sediment problems like embeddedness of cobbles and the particle size distribution when we do the bioassessment. So we have some data, but it's hard to interpret that. And the last time we did the listing, we didn't get into the physical habitat data as part of the listing process because the state program hadn't developed an electronic format for it yet. So that data is more available to us now. But I agree with Mr. Shimmick that there are other methods for assessing sediment, like looking at loss of pool volume, for example, how much of the pool is taken up by fines. That would be great to have. And then we've been in a dialogue with other staff about potential expansion of the program, and sort of a habitat assessment component has been part of that dialogue. So it's that type of assessment is, you know, very labor time intensive. So,
well, are we delisting 303D bodies? Because
I can't speak to the details of it, but the lower Salinas was delisted for sediment. I know there was some work done on historical documentation that describes the Salinas as a sandy river for many years. But I don't know if that was the basis for the delisting. or whether it was a lack of data. I'll say one thing is that we changed some of the listings from sedimentation to turbidity because it was turbidity data that caused the original listing, and so it was erroneous to call it a sedimentation listing. It was a turbidity listing. So there was some clarification that went on with that. I can't remember exactly the circumstances of the delisting for the lower
sediments. Any other regions have a separate mechanism for assessing sedimentation other than trying to use turbidity?
Well, like I said, there's some physical habitat measures.
And there other regions are using them?
Yeah, I would imagine some are.
Okay. Any reason?
For example, there's the Garcia River TMDL is one that used a number of physical measures and developed targets associated with them. And I'm assuming that's how it got listed. I don't know how the original listing occurred. Do you?
Where is that? Yeah. Which region?
Meth Region 1. They have sedimentation is one of their primary issues up there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Shallcross.
Yeah. Well,
is there an interest?
There's an interest on my part. If staff thinks there's an issue there, do we have sedimentation problems? And we're not. If we think we have sedimentation problems, there's one way to find out, and that's measure for it. Apparently, turbidity measuring isn't working or doesn't.
Isn't it related? A good indicator. It's highly related.
It may be highly related, but if we're using the fact that we're only using turbidity measures to delist things for sedimentation, then I don't think that's a.
That's not
a good indicator if we have sedimentation problems or not.
Yeah. Right.
So
what I meant was if we had turbidity data and it got a listing for sedimentation, we corrected the listing.
Right, I understand that.
So it has to be associated with the data that was used for the listing.
I understand that. Okay. So if anyone, maybe we don't think we have any sedimentation issues in our region.
No, I think we do.
Okay, well then why aren't we monitoring?
We also have a number of sediment listings for sedimentation.
And then why aren't we, testing for sedimentation?
We do some testing for sedimentation. It's just not a comprehensive sediment assessment.
Okay. So I think Mr. Schimmick brought up a good point that the lower Salinas is probably a pretty good suspect for sedimentation issues. I think we can all agree on that. So maybe even so, because it is difficult and probably costly, maybe that's one place we would test for sedimentation using some of these other methods. So that's all. I'm just throwing it out there. If staff doesn't think it's a big issue, that's fine. But maybe we could hear back on that.
Well, if you really want to place a test Moss Landing Harbor.
Well, yeah. I was going to bring this up. Moss Landing's dredging sediment out of there all the time. So it would indicate there might be an issue. So maybe we should look into it.
In the past, I would definitely say it's been, it's not that it's not an important issue. It's just expensive to do the work. It takes a lot of field time, so it's just been a matter of where we put our field priorities. Okay. So,
well, speaking for Moss Landing, we do a lot of testing when we do our dredging.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of that information is already available through that district, which we could supply. I'm speaking for Moss Landing Harbor District, could supply to this agency if they wished.
Are you talking about the chemistry or the volume?
Both.
Yeah.
Because we have the chemistry, we have to do the chemistry before we can dredge, and then we know how much that we're going to dredge because that's on a contract basis. So we can do both.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so.
When you don't have anything else to work on, you can get around to that.
So do we want staff to take a look at this particular item and let the board know through the next EO report?
Well, I think what I would like staff to do is sort of have a little meeting on it and talk about it and see if they think that's an issue or that we have money to deal with it and that if it rises to the level, of some sort of priority and get back to us, maybe in an EO report or something, at some point in the future.
Good. All right. Mr. Schmidt, did you want to speak at public comment? Because your card says item 12 or 23.
Oh, I missed item 12. I apologize for being late. I'm not going to speak on the ag waiver. I'm only going to speak on the database issue.
Then we're going to take that up in 23.
That's all going to be done with 23.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, that concludes the public speaker cards I have.